December 10th, 1987, 22-year-old Christy Jo Nichols met with a domestic violence counselor to talk about the abuse she was facing at home. That night, Christy and her husband Mark took their two young children out for dinner and photos with Santa. Afterward, they brought the kids home and went to a bar where Christy worked. It was the last time anyone ever saw her. The next morning, Christy was gone, but her car and all of her belongings were still at home. Blood was later found inside the house and in Mark's car, yet he insisted she left on her own. More than three decades have passed, and Christy has never been found. But her family is still searching, waiting for the answers that will finally bring her home. Hey everyone, welcome back to Detective Perspective. My name is Derek Levasseur. I'm a licensed private investigator and former police detective. Each week I'll be covering an unsolved case in story format. I'll then give you my perspective on the investigation and provide contact information for the individuals or organizations connected to the case so that if you have any tips, you can contact them directly and maybe you can help solve a case. So if you're someone who's interested in true crime, specifically unsolved cases, and you would like to hear my opinion on those investigations, please consider subscribing, whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you use. So first off, I've been going through all the comments, both on YouTube and on audio platforms like Apple and Spotify, and I appreciate all your comments regarding the Ellen Greenberg series. It is clear that you would like me to do more multi-part series like that in the future, so I will. I am going to have to be very selective in what cases I choose, as it's kind of outside the scope of what we do here. But I do think certain cases, based on the specifics of that case, will warrant a further deep dive. And when that case comes up, I'll be here to cover it. So please send your suggestions. We're always looking through them. Now, regarding the case that we're covering tonight, this is one that's rarely covered and the leads have dwindled. And I wanted to cover this case last month because it was Domestic Violence Awareness Month, but with the Ellen Greenberg series going three parts, we're going to be outside of that. However, it doesn't mean I'm not going to cover it. So this is one that involves domestic violence, and I want to make sure I highlight it because, unfortunately, I know there are people who watch or listen to this show and are either directly experiencing domestic violence or know someone who is. So this is important, and I think it's educational. I think we could all learn from it. So without wasting any more time, let's dive into this week's case. Christy Jo Williams was born on September 6, 1965, to her parents Ken and Connie. She grew up in Nebraska with her sister and brother and was known for being smart, quiet, and shy, especially around strangers. In 1984, when Christy was 19, she met 23-year-old Mark Nichols. The two married quickly and settled in Gothenburg, Nebraska, a small farming town of about 3,500 people. Christy and Mark went on to have two children, and they became her entire world. Her mother, Connie, told Unsolved Mysteries, quote, "Christy never felt like she accomplished anything until she had her children. She was just so proud of her children." While Christy loved being a mom, her marriage wasn't going well. Mark was physically abusive, and the violence sent Christy to the hospital multiple times. She confided in friends and family about what was happening at home, but leaving wasn't easy for her. In early December 1987, Connie said Christy called and told her that Mark had taken their two children, who were just 3 and 1 at the time, to his parents' house, and he refused to let Christy see them. Obviously, Christy was upset, so Connie offered to come up and help, but she told her mom not to. Connie thought she sounded afraid, so she started checking in on her more often from that point forward. According to the Omaha World Herald, Connie later learned why Mark had left with the kids. He found out Christy had gone to see a divorce attorney. Eventually, he agreed to bring the children home if she promised not to meet with the attorney again. Christy took the deal, willing to do anything to have her kids back. After Mark returned, Christy called her mom to say that things had been worked out. But she also said Mark had removed her name from the checking account and told her that the police would pick her up if she tried to leave town. Connie said, quote, "Christy was a very timid girl, so when he told her things like that, she believed him." The abuse continued, and by December 9th, Christy was fed up again. She went to another divorce attorney, this time out of town so Mark wouldn't find out. Because of the abuse she was facing, the attorney told her not to worry about the money. He said he'd file for divorce and she could pay him later. He then called the police chief of Gothenburg and arranged a meeting on December 10th with Christy, the chief, and a counselor who specialized in domestic abuse. So the 10th arrived, and Christy met with the abuse counselor and the police chief, and during that meeting, she told them about the abuse she had suffered at the hands of Mark. She still had the visible bruises, and the counselor seemed to be taking her seriously, but the chief did not. Before leaving, Christy scheduled another appointment to meet with the counselor the following day, but she would never make it to that meeting. And we're going to talk about what happened between the time of that meeting and the next morning right after this break. Ever wake up sweaty, freezing, or just uncomfortable? The temperature in your bedroom can make or break your sleep. That's why I switched to Miracle Made Sheets. They're inspired by NASA technology and use silver-infused temperature-regulating fabric to help you sleep at the perfect temperature all night long. So hot sleeper, cold sleeper, doesn't matter. These sheets help keep you in your comfort zone all night long. And thanks to their antibacterial silver technology, Miracle Made Sheets stay cleaner and fresher up to 3 times longer than regular sheets. That means fewer odors, fewer wash cycles, and less laundry. And the most important part of all when it comes to sheets, they feel just as good, if not better, than the sheets you'd find in some 5-star hotels, but without the steep price tag. So they're smooth, breathable, and ridiculously comfortable. They're also great for your skin. All that hidden bacteria in regular sheets, it can clog your pores and cause breakouts. Miracle Made's antibacterial design helps you sleep cleaner and clearer night after night. So upgrade your sleep or give the gift of better rest. All you have to do is go to trymiracle.com/detective to try Miracle Made Sheets today. You'll save over 40%, and when you use my promo code DETECTIVE, you'll get an extra 20% off plus a free 3-piece towel set. They make an amazing gift, and with a 30-day money-back guarantee, there's no risk. So again, that's trymiracle.com/detective at checkout. Make sure to use my code DETECTIVE. Thanks to Miracle Made for sponsoring this episode. Okay, we're back from break, and I had talked about the meeting and how the chief didn't really take it that seriously, and he came out later and said that she just wasn't very connected to the conversation that day, and she had her kids with her, and she was flustered and disconnected. And as we go through this episode, you may find that him saying this after the fact may be an excuse for their inaction. So I'll let you guys be the judge on that as we go through this episode, but this won't be the last time you hear from this chief. So they have this initial meeting, and then Christy, Mark, and the children have dinner at Pizza Hut, and then they take the children for photos with Santa. That night, Mark had hired a babysitter so that they could go out and play pool at a bar where Christy worked, and she didn't want to go out with Mark, but to keep the peace, she agreed to do so. According to the Lincoln Journal Star, Mark and Christy left the bar around midnight and stopped at an all-night convenience store on their way home. The clerk that was working that night later said that Mark shopped for breakfast items and milk, and Christy stayed at the counter talking to him. He told reporters, quote, "She seemed really nervous and edgy, and it seemed like she was in a hurry to get somewhere." That would be the last time anyone saw her alive. At around 8:30 the next morning, Christy's mother, Connie, called to check in on her. She had also tried to call her the night before to see how the meeting with the abuse counselor went, but she reached the babysitter instead. So that next morning, when she called to speak with Christy, she spoke to Mark instead, and he told her that Christy was still asleep. So Connie says, okay, no problem. Can you please have her call me back when she wakes up? But even after that call ended, Connie had a bad feeling that something was wrong. So she called one of Christy's friends and asked her to try calling as well, which was very smart. And when this friend did, Mark answered again, and this time he said that Christy was shopping uptown. So the friend calls Connie back, and the two of them began to panic. Understandably, the fact that he's giving them conflicting stories in that short period of time, not a good sign. Connie started calling everyone she could think of, but no one had seen or heard from Christy. Then, At around 11:30 a.m., Mark took his children to Christie's grandmother's house and asked if she could watch them so he could go search for his wife. At 1:37 p.m., Mark reported Christie missing. According to Unsolved Mysteries, he told the police that Christie had left on her own. He said that after they got home from the bar, Christie walked past the babysitter into the living room and then went to the main bathroom for about 15 minutes. Mark then said that he paid the babysitter in cash, and about 5 or 10 minutes after that, the sitter left. Mark then stated that he went to bed at around 2 a.m., and Christie was still asleep next to him when he did so. That was the last time, according to him, that he saw her, and when the children woke up around 7 a.m., he noticed that she was gone. He claimed he searched the house and saw that a suitcase was missing along with some of Christie's clothes. He even gave police a detailed list of what he said she had taken with her. And according to him, it was 2 pairs of jeans, a sweatshirt, a bra, and a jacket. Mark said that once he realized Christie was missing, he brought the children to her grandmother's house and then spent the next 2 hours driving around town trying to find her. When he couldn't, he went to the police. Now, my first issue with that is we know that there was a call earlier that morning, and at that time, he gave 2 conflicting stories about what Christie was doing. One time he said she was still sleeping, which would indicate that he had seen her in bed when he woke up and spoke to Connie. The second was a flat out lie where he says she's uptown shopping when now he's saying when he woke up, she was already gone. So it doesn't align. It doesn't make sense. And I don't know how this wasn't a bigger deal during the investigation, because I can only imagine that both Connie and this friend were interviewed. And when they were, they would have said, I called first. He told me she was still sleeping, even though he was awake. And the second person, the friend, would have said, he told me she was uptown shopping. Then the detective would go to Mark and say, hey, you're telling us that when you got up in the morning and the kids woke up, she was gone. And yet you told 2 different people a different story. Why is that? And he's not going to have a reasonable explanation for it. And now, as a police officer, at minimum, that's reasonable suspicion. Now he's going to be on your list of a person of interest, potentially a suspect. So why this wasn't the first red flag is mind-boggling to me, but if this case was clear-cut and there was an arrest made, I wouldn't be here covering it, would I? So this is just the first thing where things aren't aligning, and maybe as we get into the dynamics of this particular community, it'll make more sense to you. Because like I said, it's a small town. Everyone knows everyone, including Mark and the chief. Speaking of which, when Mark finished giving his statement, the police chief, who, as I just mentioned, knew Mark, he was friends with Mark's family, said that he needed to look around the house just as a formality. So he goes on to do a quick walkthrough and said he didn't find anything out of place, despite the fact that Christie's car, toiletries, makeup, winter coat, most of her clothing, her social security card, and all of her jewelry were left behind, not to mention her 2 children, who she loved more than anything. So the chief decided after this thorough investigation that Christie had abandoned her family. So no investigation into her disappearance was opened, and because of that, there was very little media coverage in the early days of this case. In January of 1988, the chief told reporters there was nothing indicating foul play. According to the Lincoln Journal Star, he said that 3 people around Gothenburg and North Platte had seen Christie after she was reported missing. But I don't need to tell you guys at this point, you're part-time detectives, witness statements, if they even did happen, are not always accurate. There have been multiple cases where people have reported seeing victims after they're reported missing, and we later find out that they were absolutely deceased and buried hundreds of miles away when these alleged sightings took place. So that's one thing. Even if they did say, yeah, we saw her, it's not necessarily true. And then the second question, especially with this case, is we're hearing this from a source who didn't do his job in the first place. So is he just covering his tracks? Very possible. He also revealed that Mark had found a handwritten note believed to have been written by Christie in her car after she disappeared. The letter was addressed to a man she was allegedly having an affair with, and said she was considering leaving her husband and kids. State crime lab testing confirmed the handwriting was in fact Christie's. So as far as this letter is concerned, I've never seen it. And as far as I know, it's never been released publicly. And even if the letter is real, I have a hard time believing that she had said she was considering leaving her kids. The letter could be real, and she could be having an affair or talking to another man. Completely possible, especially when you consider the relationship she's currently in. But even with that being the case, I would like to see the letter, because this chief could be embellishing or flat out lying. Again, I don't have any kind words to say about this guy. He's a complete embarrassment to law enforcement from everything I've read just in this case. So is it possible that he's lying about what the letter contains? Absolutely. I believe he lied about the initial meeting and those interactions. So in my opinion, he's not trustworthy. And according to this amazing chief, they were also able to verify that Christy had been in fact seeing someone else, and they were able to track this person down. And when they did, the man told police he and Christy had just started talking because, quote, she was lonely and needed someone to talk to. Detectives interviewed him, but were convinced he had nothing to do with her disappearance. And this is why I said what I just said. Is it possible that she was talking to another man? Absolutely. I'm not here to tell you whether it's right or wrong, but allegedly, according to what we know, she was in a very abusive relationship at home, and Mark was an abusive guy. And as we go through this episode, you're going to find out a little bit more about his history, but spoiler alert, I believe she was being abused at home, no doubt about it. And is it possible that she needed to get that interaction and that social connection from someone else to kind of remove herself mentally from that situation so she could still have the courage to stay home for the sake of her children? Absolutely. I personally don't blame her one bit. But just because she was talking to another man and may have had thoughts of leaving with this man, potentially taking her kids with her, doesn't mean she would have left her kids without ever saying goodbye. Two very different things. So it can be true that she was talking to another man, but that doesn't mean that she's a bad person and would do this to her children. I can separate the two, and I think most of you can. But because of this information, the police refused to investigate any further, and Christy's family had to take matters into their own hands. So they hired a private investigator, and Christy's aunt, Joanne, moved to Omaha to work with him. And she actually ended up becoming a private investigator as well. So that's pretty cool to see that she took this unfortunate tragedy and turned it into something that could be a career to help others. Kudos to Joanne. Unsolved Mysteries reported that Connie, Joanne, and the PI continued digging into the case. They learned that the babysitter said she never saw Christy after she and Mark left for the bar. She said that when Mark came home around 12:30 or 1 a.m., she only saw him. She heard one door close, but never heard Christy's footsteps or the sound of anyone in the bathroom. And this is a major problem. Now, I wasn't able to confirm the bar location in relation to where they lived, but I would love to know the distance and the time it would take to go from the bar to the convenience store to their home. I have to imagine it's going to be relatively close. This is a small town with not a lot of people. So my mind tells me that at most from the bar to the convenience store to home, you're probably looking at 15, 20 minutes. I could be wrong. If someone has that information about Gothenburg, please let me know. But if that's the case and he didn't show up until 1 a.m., what happened during that other half hour? And this information about the babysitter wasn't the only thing they uncovered. They also learned that on the same day Christy was reported missing, Mark moved out of the family home, and within a few weeks, he sold both of their cars. Thankfully, the PI was able to still get access to the house that the couple had shared, and when he looked around, he found a significant amount of blood on the bedroom carpet. So based on what the PI and Christy's family had figured out, they went to the Dawson County Attorney's Office and requested that the state police take over the case. The Nebraska State Patrol officially took the investigation over on February 4th, 1988. Detectives then obtained a warrant to search the Nichols home and found that same blood spot on the bedroom carpet, as well as blood in the bathroom sink. When they cut out the carpet, they discovered that the stain had actually soaked through the padding underneath and that the mark on the pad was much larger than what was shown on the surface, which is normally the case. And from what we found, the blood stain was about the size of a coffee saucer, so a pretty significant amount. And so you might be sitting there asking yourself, didn't the police chief do that initial walkthrough? How did he miss this blood? Well, you're in luck, because the Lincoln Journal Star asked him this exact question, and his answer is going to shock you, because when he was asked this question, he responded by saying, actually, he didn't miss it. He saw it, but quote, didn't think much of it because it was a round spot about the size of a half dollar. He added that he, quote, really wasn't looking for blood. What? I don't even have a response here. I'm not very emotional on these episodes. It's not really my thing. What are we talking about here? You're walking through the house to see if there's anything that doesn't align with this woman leaving under her own free will. A spot of blood would contradict that. That would absolutely suggest that something else took place in that home prior to her disappearing. That's the exact thing you should be looking for. Signs of struggle, signs of injury. That's our job. That's like the main thing you look for. You may even see subtleties where there's just something out of place that raises an eyebrow. You usually don't see actual spots of blood. And yet, according to him, he saw it and just decided on his own it wasn't important. If you're asking me, I don't think he saw it. I really don't. I really don't think, just based on what I know about this guy, I don't even know if he actually did a walkthrough. Did he even go into the bedroom? That's my question. So at minimum, he's an idiot. Worst case scenario, he did see the blood, knew exactly what it represented, and decided to turn a blind eye. So regarding this blood, it was cut out and it was removed from the house, and testing later confirmed that the blood was in fact Christie's. So when Mark was confronted with this spot of blood and what it represented, he said that it was actually menstrual blood, and claimed that when he had woken up on the night that Christie disappeared, he found her standing over the stain. And as you might expect, detectives didn't believe the story. So they had the lab try to figure out if the blood was menstrual or not, and they were able to determine that it wasn't. But even after all of this, Mark continued to insist that Christie had left on her own, and even suggested that she may have run off with the man she had been seeing. But as the investigation continued, there was another shocking occurrence. Detectives found Christie's blood in the trunk of Mark's car. After that discovery, a judge removed the children from Mark's custody and placed them with Christie's mother. While living with Connie, Christie's 3-year-old daughter reportedly said, quote, Daddy put mommy in a bucket and put her in, quote, green water. Connie had the children for about a year before a new judge decided they should be placed into foster care so they would be in a, quote, more neutral environment. Later, Mark regained custody and Connie never saw them again. Now, this isn't really my area of expertise, but what an asinine, idiotic move for this judge to take the children out of the home of Connie, who's not being suspected of anything, and put them in the foster care system. And I know that the foster care system does some great things and there's some great stories, but I've also heard some horror stories from people who've been in the foster care system. So I don't know how this person became a judge. They're a moron. I don't even need to know their name to think that this is the right move, to take these children away from a place they know and people that care about them and that they recognize and put them in the system. And all this just to eventually have the guy who's potentially involved in the murder of their mother to now be in custody of these children again, which obviously he's never going to let them see Connie, because he knows that Connie's going to be there to correct the narrative and let them know who she really was and how she really felt about them. And to think about all this time that has passed since then, these kids are grown up now and they never got to know Connie. And it's an absolute travesty. And as far as the actual investigation, the Nebraska State Police continued investigating Christie's disappearance. According to Unsolved Mysteries, detectives looked into Christie's prior reports of abuse and learned that just a few weeks before she went missing, she had been treated at a hospital for injuries she suffered during a fight with Mark. They also confirmed that Christie had met with a divorce attorney 2 days before she disappeared and also an abuse counselor a day before she disappeared. So there was clearly signs on the wall that said this is getting worse, not better, and this woman's life is in jeopardy. And yet really nobody was taking the initiative to act. Now, I also know as an adult, Christy has the right to make her own decisions, but if history has taught us anything, this escalation of violence is only going to end one way, and it's never good. Detectives also followed up with Mark's story about driving around town looking for Christy after dropping off the kids at their grandmother's. But no one in the small town of Gothenburg remembered seeing him on any road that morning. At this point, it seemed clear that Mark had done something to Christy. But detectives still didn't have enough evidence to make an arrest. So they kept digging, and so did Christy's mom and the private investigator. But there was still no sign of Christy anywhere. We have more to cover. We have some more discoveries in this case, and we're going to talk about them right after this break. In the world of true crime, bad habits usually lead to bad outcomes, but in real life, it doesn't have to be that way. Meet Fume, the flavored air device designed to help you ditch the bad habits and feel good about what you're reaching for. No nicotine, no vapor, no batteries, just an awesome design and delicious flavors like crisp mint, peach blush, and cinnamon hearts. Fume is twice as effective as the solutions you've probably already tried, and it's backed with lab-tested safety studies, so both doctors and customers agree Fume is a good habit, and it's one-third the cost of your bad habit. I absolutely love the design. You've probably seen the Fume on my desk in multiple episodes. It fits my aesthetic, that's for sure. It's got the real wood. I think it's walnut, real metal. It's got the fidget action to it. You can hear that, the clicks. I try not to play with it too much while I'm recording because I know that's not great for the editor, but I really, really like the design and I like the taste. My favorite is the orange vanilla. I know that I didn't mention it in the opening. I was saving it for here. Crisp mint is good as well, but for me, if it's a go-to, orange vanilla all day long. Plus, it tastes really fresh. And these are all natural flavors. So again, like I said earlier, no nicotine, no vapor. That's what I'm looking for. And Fume has already helped over 700,000 people take steps toward better habits. And now it's your turn. Use my code DETECTIVE to get a free gift with your journey pack. All you have to do is head over to tryfume.com. That's tryfume.com. Use code DETECTIVE and claim this free limited time offer today. The holiday season is officially here, which means we're going to be very busy, but in the best way possible. And hopefully for all of you out there, that means many friends and family coming over to the house, which unfortunately means you got to do a good cleaning. But that's where HomeAglow, the game-changing cleaning service, comes in. This episode is sponsored by HomeAglow, the top-rated home service platform dedicated to making your space clean and tidy, and it's super easy to use. They have online booking capabilities that allow you to instantly schedule a cleaner in your area for a special occasion, party, or on a regular basis to take something off your plate. You can get access to trusted cleaners in your area, and you can actually see their reviews and profiles before you book them. And cleaners have to pass a rigorous certification process and maintain a 4.8 star average rating. The best part, 100% of the cleaning fees and tips go directly to the cleaner. So you're supporting real people in your community, not some giant corporation. So here's how it works. To schedule a cleaning, you simply go to HomeAglow's website to choose the day and time you're looking for and the duration of your cleaning to match with a cleaner. And if you really want to make your life easier, the best part is their Forever Clean membership, which saves you $30 an hour on all future cleanings. And you can book unlimited cleanings starting at just $19 an hour, backed by HomeAglow's happiness guarantee. So take cleaning off your plate this holiday season by using HomeAglow. Head to homeaglow.com/detective to get your first 3 hours of cleaning for only $19. That's HomeAglow.com/detective. Okay, we're back. And before the break, I had mentioned another discovery that was going to occur in this case. And that was in March of 1988, about 3 months after Christy disappeared. So a truck driver, he's on the road, and he spots Christy's suitcase beneath a tree at a rest area roughly 30 miles west of Gothenburg. The Lincoln Journal-Star reported that inside the suitcase were two pairs of Christie's jeans, a sweatshirt, a bra, and a jacket. Her purse was also inside as well. Detectives did search the surrounding area extensively, but didn't find anything else connected to Christie's case. So basically, what was found in that suitcase was exactly what Mark had said Christie had taken with her. And I want you to pause this episode really quickly. And you tell me, whether it's on audio or YouTube, if you're taking off on your own and you're deciding to take a suitcase, are you going to pack this amount of clothing? What's this going to get you? A day or two? If you're really going to make the move, you're going to make the move. At minimum, you're going to take your identification. You're going to take your Social Security card. Maybe you leave the jewelry behind. I don't know. But I think you would at least take a couple pairs of underwear, more than just a bra. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's just me. Or maybe this doesn't make sense. Maybe this doesn't appear to be a suitcase that was filled by someone who is going to be leaving their family for the rest of their lives. Just maybe. And so after the suitcase was found, police were finally convinced that foul play was involved. They told the public that Christie's case was now being classified as a, quote, missing person with foul play. And they said, quote, nothing had surfaced in the investigation to indicate she is alive. And Mark continued telling the media that he believed Christie was still alive and said he didn't know where she was or why she hadn't contacted her family. And I will say, without having all the details, me pointing out that Mark had perfectly described what was missing wasn't lost on investigators, because from what I've learned, they also found this very suspicious. It wasn't only the discovery of the suitcase and where it was found, because again, if this was someone who was leaving their family, then that suitcase would be with them wherever they ended up, right? They wouldn't have dumped it along the side of the road 30 miles from where they had came from. So they knew at that point something wasn't adding up here. In addition to that, they also knew that Mark's ability to identify exactly what was in that suitcase didn't make sense. How would he know those items specifically were taken and that it wasn't two bras or three bras, right? How would he know it was one bra specifically? And so they deduced what you and I are deducing, which is the only way he would know exactly what was taken by Christie was if he was the one who actually packed her belongings, right? It doesn't take a detective to figure that out. So now things are starting to pick up in this case and there's more media coverage. And that fall, Unsolved Mysteries released an episode on Christie's disappearance. And in that episode, Mark actually gave an interview, but no shocker to anyone, he denied any involvement with her disappearance and claimed that he and Christie had only ever been in one bad fight where she injured her thumb. And when asked to describe in detail what happened during this incident, he said, quote, I was trying to get her to stay home from going out, and she was getting so upset at me that she started trying to hit and kick me. And that's when she burned the side of my neck with a cigarette she was holding. I tossed her onto the waterbed and she landed wrong and twisted her thumb up underneath her. Now, after the episode aired, around 165 calls came in, and some of the tips led to new searches, but none of them led to Christie. On December 11th, it had been 1 year since Christie disappeared. Connie told the Associated Press, quote, I honestly feel she's not alive. I don't think there's any possibility that she's out there. Mark told reporters that he still believed Christie was alive, probably living out west somewhere. He said that while the two were having marital issues, before she disappeared, they were only minor. 4 months after that interview, Mark filed for divorce, claiming that Christie had abandoned him and their children. He later remarried and moved to another city. After that, everything slowed down and Christie's case went cold. Years passed with almost no new developments. Then, in 1997, Christie's aunt Joanne spoke to the Omaha World Herald for the 10-year anniversary of Christie's disappearance. She said she was still following leads and wouldn't let anyone forget Christie. On the other hand, Mark's father told the Herald, quote, we've completely forgotten Christie's disappearance and have moved forward. Apple doesn't fall far from the tree, I see. Very disrespectful. At minimum, this is the mother of your grandchildren. And you don't know what happened to her. Yeah, maybe she did leave home and maybe the person that she left with did something bad to her. So to say that you've completely forgotten about her disappearance and moved on with your lives, it's not something that needs to be said publicly, even if it's what you're thinking. So again, like father, like son, I guess. I don't know. Here's an interesting side note that I wanted to include in the episode, speaking about Mark. Now, by the time Mark had divorced his third wife and then married his fourth, he had been accused of assaulting both of them as well as his first wife. So an arrest warrant for third-degree assault was filed against him in 1992, but he moved out of state before it could be served. So this is what I was referring to earlier when I talked about his history. There may be a small pocket of people who ask the question, was Christy telling the truth? Was she actually being abused? I wasn't there. I didn't see the injuries. But this is where I'm developing my opinion of Mark. You have multiple people indicating the same type of behavior, including an actual charge for this type of behavior. So where there's smoke, there's fire. One person says it, okay, it's all right to be skeptical of it. Two people, now it's gaining legs. When you have three to four people, I think it's pretty much confirmed. After Mark fled the state, things did remain quiet for a while, but in 2003, there was a major update in Christy's case. The Nebraska State Patrol's Cold Case Division announced that they were now investigating Christy's disappearance as a homicide. And they didn't stop there. They said that Mark was their only suspect. And according to the Lincoln Journal Star, police confirmed that Mark had taken a polygraph in December of 1987, but the results were inconclusive. Detectives said his story, quote, isn't right. They continued investigating using new technology along the way, and unfortunately, there have yet to be any breakthroughs in this case. The most recent update came in 2023 when police said, quote, it is still an open investigation and has been assigned to the cold case unit of the Nebraska State Patrol. We field information to them as it comes in and follow up on our own leads. The current Gothenburg police chief, not the same guy I've been talking about all episode, confirmed that Mark remains the only suspect. And he added, it's not a matter of having no physical evidence in the case, but rather of missing the few remaining pieces that could tie everything together for prosecution. The chief went on to say, quote, not by any means is this investigation over. It is always open and always will be until we can figure it out. He went on to say, quote, I think the case will be solved with technology and DNA advances. And I think it comes back to people's memories. Maybe they think, I should really say something. I haven't wanted to say anything for all these years because I didn't want to look like a fool. We don't care about any of that. We just want the information. We would rather have it and find out that there's nothing to it, but maybe it would pan out and it would be just what we've been looking for. And I say this to you guys all the time. If you know something about any of these cases, but you feel like it's not important or it might not be relevant or law enforcement probably already has this information, don't make that mistake. Report it to them. Let them vet the information you have and let them decide its significance. You don't know everything they have in the case. And you could have the missing link to bringing this to an end. You never know. And it could be something trivial. Just an ability to discredit a potential alibi could be the key to solving it. So if you know anything, regardless of how small you may think it is, come forward, relay that information, and like the chief said, it may be exactly what they're looking for. And as far as Christy's concerned, unfortunately, she is still missing. Her family and investigators continue searching for her, hoping to one day bring her home to the children she loves so much. All right, so let's dive into this perspective, and I want to elaborate on a couple things that I said, but this is not going to be a long one. This is one of those cases that is a call to action. There are investigations that come to me where there's not a lot of substance, there's not a lot of meat on the bone, and that's the problem. The case is going cold and nobody's talking about it. So it's on people who have these types of platforms to rejuvenate them. So we got to throw these in there to make sure that nobody forgets the names of these victims. So I want to go back to something I said earlier in this episode, the timeline from the bar to the convenience store to home. That is extremely relevant, especially when you consider the fact that the babysitter has said Christy was not with Mark when she got home. That's major. So what happened during that window of opportunity? And if we were to learn that it's only 5 minutes to the convenience store and another 5 minutes to get to the house, and he didn't show up for an hour, that's a major issue, because what could have happened is whatever took place, whatever happened to Christy happened during that window. And when he dropped the kids off at the grandmother's, he didn't go looking for Christy. He went to hide Christy. That would explain why the suitcase was found 30 miles outside of Gothenburg. But before we go down that road, I always like to talk about scenarios, right? And to me, it's binary. There's only one of two things that happened here. Well, I guess there's three. The first being, she did in fact run away from her family. She packed up very minimal belongings, got about 30 miles outside of town with whoever she was with, or maybe by herself, decided, you know what? Even though I didn't take a lot of belongings, I don't need these either. Let's just throw them to the side of the road. I'll figure it out. And then all this time, we have never had any sightings of Christy since then. You want to go down that road and explore it? By all means, there's nothing there, but who am I to stop you? So I'm going to focus on the two areas that I think are more practical and more probable. The first one being that she was talking to another man and she decided to leave her home, and whoever this person was had malicious intentions. Maybe it wasn't the man that they identified in the letter. Maybe there was another man, someone where there's no paper trail that police are unaware of. If this person was able to get her out of the home and convince her that this was the right decision, maybe something happened then. Maybe she was a victim of foul play, and this person is the individual who dumped the suitcase 30 miles outside of town. I'm not going to sit here and say that's not possible, because we're actually covering BTK on Crime Weekly right now, and we just covered a particular crime that BTK carried out. And in this specific incident, the victim was out with a male individual. BTK breaks into the house or gets into the house, hides in the closet. The victim and this gentleman come home. They're there most of the night, and BTK just hangs out in the closet, doesn't move. The gentleman eventually leaves, and after he leaves, that's when BTK comes out of the closet and he kills Maureen. So if you were looking at this from the outside, your first suspect is going to be who? It's going to be this guy that this victim was out with all night. And you're not going to think, well, maybe there was a serial killer inside the house lurking, waiting for her to come home, and he's actually the killer. But it happened. And if we didn't have what we have now, maybe this guy would have been found guilty of a crime he didn't commit. That's an extreme example, but I put it out to you. I propose it to you so that we can all keep an open mind and understand why I can't with 100% certainty. It's not possible that there's another player on this chessboard that we just haven't identified. And that's something that we really have to continue to consider if we really want to get to the truth of what happened. So with that in our minds, now we have to talk about Mark, because it's not just the idea that it could be someone else. It's also the fact that there's so many red flags that make it harder to believe it could be someone else. We don't have any evidence that there was even another person. And the one man we do have was vetted, apparently, had an alibi, checked out, not involved. And then we have this history of abuse. And we also, with this man that we have identified, have a potential motive. Maybe Mark had already known about the letter before Christy's disappearance. Maybe Mark had known that she went to a second attorney. And maybe the chief had let him know that Christy had come by the station and had a meeting about him. Could that have triggered him to say, you know what? She's got to go. I'm going to get a babysitter. We're going to go out tonight. I'm going to make sure that the appearance is that everything's okay on the surface. And then she's going to disappear. And that would be why he goes in, pays the babysitter, makes up this excuse, and gets the sitter out of there as fast as possible. And without even her knowing it, he's using her as a quote unquote eyewitness to indicate to law enforcement that Christy was still alive when they got home that night. So what he's saying has to be true. But what he didn't plan for was Connie calling in the morning and then Connie being smart enough to have a friend call as well and him being so dumb that he didn't even give the same excuse. So when you put that information together, you can understand why law enforcement has publicly said Mark is a suspect and their only suspect. I think we've all come to that conclusion. And that's also probably why they're not spending too much time looking into the possibility that there's a third party involved in this crime that we haven't identified yet. It's the same reasonable deduction that I just did with you guys. And that's where we are. We still have no idea where Christy is, and the person that law enforcement has said is possibly responsible for her disappearance and death is still out there living their life, leaving more domestic violence victims in their wake. And it's unacceptable. And we can't sit by and just allow it to happen. I can't promise you we're going to make a difference, but at least we know by covering this case and talking about it, if nothing does happen, it won't be for lack of effort. So as the chief said in Gothenburg, the new one, not the old one, someone out there might know something. Maybe it's not a confession, right? But maybe it's something that occurred on that night specifically where you saw something or didn't see something and you think it could be important to this investigation. You need to come forward. You need to talk to police. Nebraska State Police might be waiting on a person just like you to walk through their doors and say exactly what you've known for all these years. 38 years. It's a long time, but it's not too late. So, just to recap, on the night of December 10th, 1987, 22-year-old Christy Jo Nichols went out with her husband, Mark, and by the next morning, she was gone. Her car and belongings were left behind, and her blood was later found in their home and in Mark's car. Christy's body has never been found, and Mark Nichols remains the only suspect. If you have any information in this case, you are asked to call the Nebraska State Patrol at 402-479-4049. And if you or someone you know is experiencing domestic violence, help is available. You can call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-SAFE, which is 7233. You can also chat at thehotline.org or text START to 88788. All three options are available 24/7, free, and completely confidential. There are additional resources at the hotline's website, including safety plans and guides for supporting loved ones. There's also pamphlets and information at almost every local police department. So if you walk in there and you say, hey, I'm looking for some information from me or a friend, they usually have stuff in the lobby that they can give to you, or they can have a domestic violence advocate speak with you and get you the material you need. My final words, as always, is going to be a little different tonight. Yes, to Connie and Joanne, we're fighting for you. We're hoping that we get you the answers you need, because clearly there needs to be a boost in this case. And I'm hoping that this episode provides that. But it's also for what this case represents and what you guys are fighting for, as well as what I'm fighting for, which is to bring attention to these types of cases, because unfortunately, this is not an isolated incident. We see this escalation of violence all the time. It starts off as a verbal argument, and then maybe there's a push or a shove, and then maybe there's a throwing of a plate or a threat. And as these signs continue to show themselves, people have that difficult decision of leaving everything they know and love. And all I can tell you is what I've experienced over the years, not only covering cases like this, but also as a police officer myself. Guys, it's not going to get better. It never does. I always saw the same people coming back year after year, and they would look at me and say, I know. And fortunately, most of them are still alive. I have a quick story that I want to share with you because it's something that haunts me to this day. I haven't gotten permission from her family, so out of respect, I'm not going to say the name, but I'm going to tell you the story of this case because I was a patrolman and I had went to a call for a 911 hang up, and I get there and it's a domestic violence situation, and I meet with this woman and she tells me that the exact story I'm telling you, where it started off, this guy was a good guy, and over the years, it's just continued to escalate, and she's left on numerous occasions, but he's found ways to get her back. And I sat there and I could understand, based on the things that he was saying to her and how he was convincing her through this coercive control, that this was the best position for her to be in. And I talked to her for a couple hours. There was no crime at that time. So the best thing that I could do, because this was in a halfway home, the best thing that I could do was to have him leave. And I did. I had her stay, and he left and was told not to return. So I leave that night and I go home. And the next morning, I come in and find out that there was a murder on the midnight shift. And I learn from the patrolman that arrived, he shows up, and this monster, who I'm also not going to name, is sitting out on the stairs smoking a cigarette. And the officer says to him, you know, what are you doing? Where's so-and-so? Because they looked up in the computer and could see that we had responded there earlier. And he says, oh, you don't have to worry about her. I already killed her. And he pulls out the knife. It's this huge knife. And at that point, they, you know, hold him at gunpoint and they get him in custody. He was a coward and, you know, he didn't put up a fight with these officers, only with someone who couldn't defend themselves. And the story is much worse because, as I said, this was like a halfway home. So there were nurses on duty as well. And after he killed her, a nurse walked in and she survived. And I'm not going to say all the details, but let's just say it's something that she'll never forget. And she became a victim as well. And she was out of that profession after that. But it's a story that I've never forgotten about, and it happened many years ago. And it reminds me of all the other cases that we've talked about over the years. So my final words is to anybody out there who may be personally going through something like this, or you know someone who's going through something like this. I know it's hard, and I have never had to personally go through something like it, but I'm telling you, please hear my words. It's better to get out and ask for forgiveness than permission. And that, when I say forgiveness, not from your offender, but from the people in your life, your friends and family who may have an issue with what you did. And I'm even going to go a step further, and this may be something that people have a problem with. It may be a little bit of a controversial take, but I'm going to say it because as a parent, I believe it. If you find yourself in a situation where there are children involved and you know you're within your right to defend them and protect them, and you know you did nothing wrong, and you feel like their safety could be in jeopardy if you leave without them, I'm not telling you what to do. But what I would do is, again, ask for forgiveness, then permission. If I leave, those kids are coming with me. Right or wrong, legal or not, they're coming with me, especially if I've already gone to law enforcement to tell them what's happening to me, like Christy did. If they decide not to take action, maybe the only course of action from that point is for me to make it so they can't ignore it and to make this a much bigger deal. And if that means me leaving with my kids, then that's what I have to do. Again, I'm not telling you what to do in that situation. I'm only telling you what I would do. But we need to get justice for Christy. We need to get justice for her family. And we need to hold those responsible, accountable. But overall, I'm thinking of everyone who's involved in a similar circumstance like this and still has the opportunity to get out. We are here for you. We love you. We appreciate you. You're worth more than that. And if you can't help Christy in this case, maybe she can help you. Take what has happened here as your sign to get yourself out of a similar situation before it's too late. I strongly feel like if Christy was sitting here right now, she would tell you the same. As always, guys, if there's an update in this case, I will be the first to let you know. But until then, everyone stay safe out there, and I'll see you soon.